Cater. I'm Ron Brand. This is August 24th. We were discussing Charlie's hunting and the people and areas he hunted in.
I used to fish for summer steelhead in the Deschutes River, and I had a fishing partner or person that was with me a lot of the time, and I met him on the river one day, a hot day in the summer, and we needed water. He was coming off the upper river and I was heading up the river. We met at a kind of a spring where it fed a watering trough, and I got acquainted with him there. His name was Greg Lipsy. He lived in Portland. He doesn't now, he lives in Bend. As a result of our meeting there, he taught me some of the things you need to know to catch steelhead in the summer on a fly. He was a teenage high school young man at the time I met him. And as a result of his instruction and the skills he imparted to me, that day in the evening, I caught my first steelhead on a fly. If there's any greater triumph in fishing and hunting, I don't know what it is.
Did you ever...
Than to catch your first steelhead on a fly. I caught many of them after that. But he was a better fisherman than I was. Question.
Did you ever hunt with him either on the Grand Ronde or Wallowa Rivers?
With Lipsy?
Yes.
No.
So he never came over here.
Well... No. I fished with him on a river that flows into the Willamette in that watershed down near, I can't quite think of the town, but anyway, I fished there and later in other places and in Tillamook County and the various streams there. Later in his career, he attended a community college at Portland. And he studied the various attributes and necessary skills having to do with the fish hatcheries.
Okay, this is Mr. Lipsy.
Yeah.
Studied fish.
Lipsia. Lipsy. French. That's a French name.
Okay. Did he ever do any work over here at the hatcheries?
No, he came over here a few months ago, stopped in to see me on his way to Wallowa County. Evidently, in the hope that he could get work in one of the hatcheries in Wallowa County. He wasn't successful. He went back home to Ben.
Okay, where in Union County do you fish?
None. You mean Lipsy?
No, you.
Oh, me.
Where in Union County do you fish?
Not hardly at all. There is a run of steelhead in the Grand Ronde River. There's two runs, one in the spring, in February and March, and the other one in the lower river in the fall, in October, November. And I can conscientiously suggest that it would be a good thing for you to do, to go down on the lower Grand Ronde with a fly rod and try for those wonderful fish.
So your hunting trips, were those primarily deer for you, or did you hunt elk as well?
Both.
Both.
Every year, for a long time.
Okay. The people you hunted with, were they hunting for subsistence, where they would eat the meat from the animals?
They'll eat the meat, you bet, every time, but that's not subsistence hunting, because that is a word that's used in Alaska for subsistence fishing and hunting, not here. People hunt here. It's for sport mostly. But up there, it's subsistence. And they are permitted, for example, under the laws of Alaska, to use nets of one kind or another, drift nets, other kinds of nets, to catch sockeye, mostly, and other salmonoids.
Do you remember what hunting and fishing were like when you first came here in 39, which was still the end of the Depression?
Well, the first thing I noticed was somebody coming back from a hunting trip with a whole bundle of ducks. He got out of his car down here a little ways, and I saw him, and I saw them. Now, you might say, well, what's the connection? There is one. The reason I came to Eastern Oregon was because of the good things here, and of hunting and fishing and a wonderful climate. You like it too.
Okay. You were still in your first marriage then when you first came here?
Yes.
Okay.
And we rented a room or rooms from a woman with a rather odd name, Mrs. Bug, whose son is a painter.
Do you remember her first name?
No.
How about her son's name?
Don't know that.
Don't know that.
No. But I have a memory of one particular fishing trip we took down on the lower Grand Ronde for steelhead in the fall. I had two sons and a daughter. My daughter is still with us. Both my sons have died. One of them had a wife. She was raised in Union. And she and he lived in Sparks, Nevada, when he died. He had a friend who was a retired policeman, and he married my ex-daughter-in-law when my son died, after he died. Now, I induced him to come up here and go fishing with me. And first we tried the Deschutes, and it didn't work very well, somehow or other. So I suggested we come over and hit the lower Grand Ronde, and we did. Now, he was using a rod that I had made. And I don't mind mentioning that I am a fairly skillful fellow with tools and the manufacture of fishing rods and ammunition for the rifles that I use. This man, whose name was Jeff Peck, P-E-C-K, was using a rod that I had made for my youngest son. It was a fine rod. I am proud of it. I bought the parts and put it together and put line and reel on it, and that's what he was using. So we went down to the lower Grand Ronde, and with that rod and that outfit, he hooked and landed his first and only steelhead on a fly. He hasn't been back since. That's all right, too.
I asked Charlie about his membership in the National Rifle Association.
When I got here, I did not do what most young professional men do. They join everything they can think of to join. I didn't. I joined the local rifle club and the NRA, and later I became a life member of the National Rifle Association, and I am still a life member.
Do you know any local people or associate with local people in the NRA?
Last two words.
Do you associate with local people through the NRA?
Oh, yeah, sure. We had what was his name? Abby, come here.
Repeat the name.
Abby, come here. Abby.
Okay.
The county engineer here, when I got here, and during those years, from 39 to 44, when I was here, a man named Morgan was the county engineer.
You know his first name?
No, I don't. But he had a military experience before he took the job as county engineer. So in that interval between 39 and 44, he was here and he was doing his best to prepare some of us that he thought would end up in the Army. And he did a good job. And so when I left here, I went with the skills that he had taught me.
What kind of skills are you talking about?
Shooting a rifle and hitting something.
Okay.
At long range. Now, the good story about this. Mr. Morgan later, several years later, died. And we had no engineer and didn't hire an engineer. Union County didn't have an engineer. But one day, as I was in the courthouse, where I went lots of times, and I quietly wandered. I wasn't trying to be sneaky, but I went into an office upstairs. That's in the old courthouse. And here was a man named C.K. McCormick sitting at a table. C.K. McCormick had started out as county clerk. He later became a little advanced in this hierarchy. I don't remember what it was. But he wasn't an engineer. But he was sitting at the table alone with a large book in front of him. And I looked at the book. And I asked him what he was doing with the book. The book was a guide to engineering. And this man was studying to do the best he could as an engineer when he had no training for it, and where we had lost Morgan, the engineer. I was impressed that a man would go to that much trouble to do his best for the community. That's exactly what he was doing. And he kept right on doing. Now, eventually, you know, he went to his reward. But he tried while he was here. I've got a bundle of trophies. There's one in there, and there's one over there, and there's a big box of them in one of the rooms back there. And I had some fine weapons, rifles and shotguns, pistols. I never engaged in competition with pistols. My we got the dog quiet, and now I can't think of anything. There have been some loose talk by various people, and the last one that I can think of was Senator Smith, our United States Senator, one of them, from Oregon here, and he was making what I considered ungentlemanly comments about Mr. Kerry.
Okay. Okay, Charlie's talking about his experiences at the Battle of the Bulge when he in World War II.
I didn't hear what you said.
You're talking about World War II.
Yeah,
time
go
in
on. What was the question?
Your experiences.
I wasn't there.
Okay.
I never, just before this happened, I developed a tumor in my right breast. And as soon as they found out, the authorities, they shipped me down to Austin, Texas. And there they had doctors and nurses and all kinds of support people, and they operated on me. And it was a while before I was for duty again. While I wasn't for duty, they shipped my friend over to Europe. And I've only seen one of them since. And I got a report from him. And only one, and it was about one man. And he was killed in the Hurtgen Forest. Well, he's gone.
Which friend is this that was killed there?
Sergeant Clausen. I think a lot of them were killed there. That was a deadly battle. And it was wintertime. And it was cold. And some of them got frostbitten. And one of my friends did. He lives here now.
What's his name?
Dallas Dean.
D-E-A-N?
Yes. And he's the only one that I know that came back that I knew at that time and after the war.
Okay, Charlie has some story about Gekler Lane and the Oregon Trail in here in La Grande.
Gekler Lane is the Oregon Trail.
Okay.
That's where they came up from the valley to come to the foot of the mountain over here. And if you come up Gekler Lane driving and looking out in your windshield, if you look in the right place, you can see the tracks. The wagon tracks that they made going up the mountain here. They went over the top of the mountain, topped out, leveled out, and then went down the other side, crossed the Grand Ronde River, and went up through the forest, which turned out to be, for many of them, one of the hardest parts of the trip. But those tracks are plainly visible from Gekler Lane right out here. If you ever know where to look, and they're not hard to see. But the worst part about the whole thing is that somebody built a house right square on the lower end of the trail.
When did they do this?
I have no idea. But I went up Gekler and C Street and came to the foot of the mountain. And there's the household right there on the trail. I thought that was regrettable. Now that is a wagon trail. People that didn't have wagons and did use horses or mules for transportation, riding horses, went out toward Elgin and up the mountain and the higher ground on the north side.
What is now the Tollgate Highway?
No, I don't think so. It may be. It could be. I don't know enough about it to say yes or no. But I do know Tollgate, and I've been there many times. And my daughter used to drive chip trucks up that road part of the time.
Were you here when they actually did charge a toll to go over Tollgate?
No, no, no. Nope. And,
hold on. This is a story about Orrin F. Toad Howell.
H-O-W-E-L-L.
Toad was a nickname.
Yes.
He got. Okay, go ahead.
All right. When I came here, Toad was like a lot of people. He'd had firearms and he hunted and so forth and so on. And I went with him several times. And I had a pistol at that time that I played with. And he had a rifle of some kind. And it turned out that I could shoot the pistol better than he could shoot his rifle. Now, this didn't create a great sense of pride in me, but it did prompt me to induce Toad to join the rifle club and shoot with us. And the result of that was that he became a very good shot. And but that's not the end of the story. He had a wife, and he had two kids, a girl and a boy. And the boy was a little skinny rascal, and he didn't seem to grow very well. But his mother was a good cook, and on one occasion, Toad went on a little hunting expedition for squirrels or something, and he took the little boy with him. And he took along a rather large lunch that Mama had prepared. So the little boy was tagging along behind, and he was carrying the lunch. When it come time to eat the lunch, why, they found a comfortable log and sat down and prepared to eat the lunch. And then, lo and behold, it turned out that the little boy had eaten the whole damn thing. Well, this was the beginning of something, because later, several years later, when I saw this little boy again, he was over 6 feet tall. He weighed over 200 pounds, all muscle. So he grew up.
What was the son's name?
Jack.
Jack. Is he still living here?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I do know what Lynch did. Let's see, what was his first name? Anyhow, Toad worked as a mechanic for a man named Lynch. The full name of the company that he worked for was Gettings and Lynch. Gettings lived in Elgin. Lynch lived here in LeGrand.
How do you spell Gettings?
That's spelled G-E-T-T-I-N-G-S.
Okay.
And he was an old-timer, well-respected, in Elgin. Everybody knew Gettings. And he was, I think he lived to about 100 years old. I took care of his estate, as I recall, when he died. But what I really wanted to tell you was about Lynch. Now, Lynch had a shop on Jefferson Street here in LeGrand, and that's where Toad worked for him for a long time. And then Lynch, or Gettings and Lynch, built a new shop.
Cater. The date is September 14th, 2004. We're going to start. The first question I have with Charlie is, you practiced law from when you came here in 1939 to 1979. I'd like to go back and say, what was your background and how did you first set up practicing law in LeGrand?
There, he wants to know about my background.
Okay.
I'll tell you. It was milking cows, helping harvest hay on a little farm in western Oregon, and finally leaving there by hitchhiking up and down the various roads, mainly Highway 30, which ran then and now from Portland to Astoria. And it ran through the country where I lived in my late teens. We made a living there, if you could call it that, by milking a few cows and selling the cream to a creamery in Portland.
Okay.
Raven.
Why did you head out this way, hitchhiking?
How did I get here?
Yes.
I got a ride with a lawyer that practiced here. That isn't the answer to your question.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, that's what I want to know.
No, that's not the answer.
Was that your first introduction to law out here?
Well, I didn't have any knowledge of law or legal practice in Union County when I came here. Absolutely none.
How did you get started?
But I had practiced law in one small way. My mother had several brothers and a grandmother and my grandmother, and my grandfather was gone, he had died, and my grandmother wanted my mother to have the house that she owned in Portland. So the first law work I ever did was to draw a deed conveying that residence property in Portland from my grandmother to my mother. Now, the reason my grandmother did that is pretty simple. She thought that the other sons and daughters, or other sons rather, had made it on their own. But my mother hadn't. She was married to a man whose obsession was to be a farmer, and he didn't make a very profitable choice.
Okay, how did you get started in law once you came to LeGrand?
You're insistent, aren't
you? Yes.
All right. The first thing that I did that I can remember, I rented an office. It cost me $15 a month, and I wasn't started in anything like the practice of law. I don't know what I did, but one day, a man named James Moore came to see me, and his hands, he had a big, thick book. He introduced himself. He was the manager of the Grand Ronde Hospital. And this was near the end of the Depression. And this book contained the accounts that hadn't been paid for services rendered in the hospital. And he made it plain to me, somebody to collect those accounts if it could be done. And he offered me, as his usual thing, the bill collector gets a percentage, and the rest of the money, if it's collected, goes to the original creditor. So he offered it to me, and I took it, and I had an old typewriter, an Underwood. And I used that typewriter to try to collect, and I did collect, a great deal of that money that was overdue. Now, these people that owed that money were not deadbeats. They had run into hard times, and they couldn't pay for the service they got. As soon as things improved a little, and as soon as they got a letter from me requesting payment, many, many of them did it. And I got a share of it, and that was how I got started.
Okay, how did you study for the law then?
Well, I studied for the law in Willamette University. When I went there about 1932, in my late or early teens, I had no idea what I was doing or why I was doing it. But I did think, from the things that had influenced my life, that an education would be a good thing. I didn't know why at all. Well, So
did you earn a degree from there?
I'm not up to that yet. Need to tell you this. One of my family friends, my grandmother's friend, my mother's friend, was a woman that worked for the First National Bank in Portland. She was a Dutch girl, and her name was Marta Jensma. M-A-R-T-A-J-E-N-S-M-A. Jensma. Out of the goodness of her heart, she offered to lend me money for tuition to go to one of the universities or colleges.
And this was before you came out here?
Oh, yes. I was still living on that little farm 7 miles back in the logged-off area west of St. Helens, Oregon.
Okay. Did you earn a degree in law at that time, or was that later on?
I'm coming to it. So, my father had an old suitcase, and he gave it to me, and I got down to the highway, and I hitchhiked to Portland, and I got through Portland walking, and I got on the highway on the other side, and I hitchhiked my way to Salem. Well, things developed there, and I got acquainted with a man. He told me about a woman that might need a bit of student help, so I went over to the address that he gave me, and there was an old woman and her daughter living in a big house, and they took me in, and I stayed there doing whatever work they needed done that I could do for 6 years. Now we're getting to the degrees. So, along this trail of tears, I had a friend by the name of Kenneth Oliver. And he came from Yankton just like I did, that logged-off area west of St. Helens. And he had suggested that I take a little German, and I did. And then we had a brilliant idea. He and I together would go to Europe and study in one of the great universities, such as Heidelberg. But in order to do this, it seemed to me, and he thought so too, that I needed all the French and German I could get at Willamette University, in preparation to carry on studies in Europe. Well, this was a wonderful plan, so I took all the French and German I could. And then Hitler started doing the things that he did, and we changed our mind and decided not to go.
Okay, let's get back to Union County. After you started here.
Just a minute, we're going to get there. Have to do something first. So, at the end of my 3 years, it was obvious that I needed to do something to fit me to earn a living. And the only other thing they had, except the baccalaureate arrangement, was a music school, a very small music school, and a College of Law, and a building that housed the College of Law. So I transferred to law there, and it disappointed my principal professor a great deal. He wanted me to stay and be a teaching scholar, what they called well, I don't remember the name, but anyway, assist in teaching the things that he taught. His name was Alexander Aristides Vazakis. A wonderful man.
Okay, Charlie, when you got to LeGrand, you set up an office.
Yeah, I did that.
Okay, was the office downtown?
Well, of course.
Okay.
It was in the building that now houses the First Bank. It was the First National Bank, and that both the lower floor and top floor were used. The top floor was offices, lawyers' offices. I rented one, $15 a month, and
Okay. When you did you have anybody working for you at the office, or were you just there by yourself?
No, I did it all myself.
How long did it take before you actually hired somebody to work for you?
I couldn't tell you. I don't remember. But I do know that the first employee I had was the wife of a friend of mine by the name of Stevenson, I believe. And she was with me for a while, and then work increased. And eventually, the volume of work increased to where I needed a full-time help. So I hired the woman that later became my wife. I was married before. When I came here, I had a wife, and later we had three children. So I hired my wife, Donna, and she was with me in the office until we both retired in 79.
Okay. Did you practice in the old courthouse at that time?
Oh, yes.
What was that courthouse like?
It was kind of a nice looking stone building, as I recall. It had two or three floors, one basement, one standard level, and then the top floor where the courtroom was located and the judge's office.
Okay. What were there any other offices there? Either legal offices or...
In the courthouse?
Yeah, in the courthouse. What other offices were there?
Well, there was the county clerk's office.
Okay, the clerk.
And the sheriff's office. And... For a while, there was the county engineer's office.
How about the county commissioners?
They came and went. They weren't there all the time.
They did have an office there sometime, though.
I don't know. I couldn't say.
Was there a jail there?
Oh, yes.
Where was the jail? In the basement?
No. It was on that first floor, in the back.
Were there any city offices there? It was mostly county.
They were all county.
It was all county.
Yeah.
Okay. How was the court set up? Was there a district and a circuit court at
yeah,
that time?
Yeah, both.
There were both.
Well, there was certainly a circuit court. And at some stage, there developed a district court to handle smaller cases.
Okay. Was there a municipal court there?
Yeah, there was a municipal court, but it wasn't in the courthouse. It was downtown.
It was downtown.
Yes.
So you started practicing in that building when you went to court.
I started practicing from my office to the circuit court in the courthouse. It was a movement all the way. I picked up and walked to the courthouse, and I probably didn't have a car then. I didn't have any transportation for a while. As a matter of fact, the first tough case I had, there was pretty tough, too. I didn't have any transportation to use in the job. The judge gave me, because he appointed me to represent a person, a man who was charged with negligent homicide. I think I may have told you this.
Yes, I think you did.
Sooner. A young man that was going to this the school here, it was walking down the road in the dark night, and the car hit him and killed him. There were three people in the car, a young woman, two men. One of the men was a fellow by the name of Johnny Jennings Lewis. He was a hard looker. He'd been charged and convicted of five felonies before he got here. I didn't have any transportation, but I represented Lewis. And the judge found him not the judge. The circuit court jury found him innocent, or at least not guilty. That's the way it works. They don't find for innocent. It's either guilty or not guilty, and this one was not guilty. Later, I got to thinking about what the judge did. That was R.J. Green. He was the circuit judge. He was the one that appointed me to represent Lewis. The system then, they didn't have people on retainer or salary as public defenders. The judge would just appoint somebody out of the lawyers that were available.
Was this a matter of law or necessity that a person had to have a lawyer?
It was absolute law and constitutional requirement.
Okay. How did somebody like that get paid?
Well, the judge would indicate to the people that handled the money, and he'd tell them what to do, and they would do it. What he told them, of course, in my case, I'm just guessing because I don't remember a thing about it, but he must have told them that they should draw a draft or check to reimburse me for this service.
So you were paid by the court?
By the county.
Or by the county?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of people did you end up representing, generally?
I can answer that pretty easily. I was for 40 years a country lawyer. That's it. A country lawyer takes care of everything except two things: patents and maritime law. And you can't do either of those because you have to be in patents, you have to be in Washington, D.C., where the patent office is located. To handle maritime law, you have to be close to the big waters, big rivers, where the stevedores are, where the ships are, where the ships come and go.
So you would handle a wide variety of cases.
Yes.
Did you handle divorces?
Oh, lots of them.
How were those? Did those get kind of dicey sometimes?
Well, I thought of a couple of them, and I made notes here. One of them had to do with a friend of mine. And his wife got too friendly with some neighbors, and he decided to get a divorce, and he always hired me if he needed somebody. So I was Marsh Dear, D-E-A-R. And I don't hesitate to mention his name, because it won't embarrass him now. But the interesting thing about it is I got a divorce for the to split this marriage couple. And then she wouldn't leave.
She wouldn't leave his home?
She stayed right there, and he couldn't get her out, and I couldn't. That wasn't my job, and I was glad it wasn't. Eventually she left, but for quite a while she did not leave. I don't know what the reason was. The possibility, even probabilities, were that she didn't have any place to go.
Okay. What other kinds of cases did you cover? How about things like related to alcoholism, robberies? I don't know that there was drug addiction at that time.
Oh, I didn't have anything to do with them. I did represent a few people that were prompted by overindulgence into some kind of little criminal activities like car theft. I had a client that was charged with car theft, and it was my defense was, and they accepted it, that the man was drunk and he didn't actually know what he was doing.
Okay, did you win that case?
Yes.
You did? Okay, oh, so yes. That was a defense for drunkenness.
That was a defense for car theft.
For car theft.
And the defense was drunkenness. The odd and interesting and amusing thing about it was the district attorney was a, let's see, what was it? Well, I won't try to remember his name. But he was made leery about this defense in this case because the defense was simply the guy was too drunk to know what he was really doing. Another case came up, and it involved different people and more people, two or three young men. And they had been drinking, and that is why they did what they did. But when we got to the courthouse and were putting on the evidence, it became apparent to the district attorney that I was going to weasel out of this by this drunkenness defense, this under the influence of defense. So he helped me prove by his work in the courthouse, in the courtroom. He helped me disprove that. You see, he remembered what happened to him in that other case, and he didn't want to be hooked on that under the influence thing again, so he helped me prove they weren't under the influence, and they were found not guilty, too.
Why were they found not guilty?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. How long did that drunkenness defense, how long did that work?
Just twice. Well, just the two times that I mentioned, no other.
Do you know of any other lawyers in Union County who use that same defense?
No, I don't.
Okay. Would you, when you quit your practice in 79, do you think you would have tried that defense, and would it have worked?
Oh, no. Every case is different. Everything is different. Let's see. Now, after the intervals that we've discussed, Then some of the farmers out here, and other people too, decided it would be beneficial to the community if they had a people's utility district to own and operate the electrical system on which we depended for electricity. And so they created a People's Utility District. And that happened sometime, I believe, between 44 and 46. Because I came back from the military in 46. And they hired me right away, or retained me, to represent the People's Utility District here. And I've talked to you about that before. Anyway, that really was a beneficial situation for me because they paid me in a reasonable way, and I was able to pay for my groceries. I never charged a damn thing in almost my whole life. Cash. Always cash. If you want to know the secret of my, whatever it is, my life, it's pay cash.
Okay, how long did that People's Utility District last? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, just for sure. A few years, and then it was terminated.
What happened to electric service after that?
Well, it went back to CalPAC, California Pacific Utilities Company, which was the company that was operating the utility before the POD came into existence, during and after. And then some years passed, and California Pacific sold out to the present supplier, what is, you know, the
Oregon Trail Electric.
That's the one. Yeah. And I had nothing further to do with it except to practice country law, and I sure as heck did that.
Okay. Were there, in with the different lawyers practicing in Union County, were there different specialties that lawyers took on?
Not really. These were all country lawyers.
But they did most things, except maritime and patent law.
That's right. That's exactly it. I conceived the opinion during my practice, and I was not at all hesitant about